This episode of the Infamous Podcast is brought to you by the Flying Pork Apparel Company.
Do you have a moment to talk about the Flying Pork Apparel Company? We specialize in designer t-shirts, several of which are available on our website, flyingporkapparel.com. But we also do custom designs for special events and group functions. The Flying Pork Apparel Company, fielding nearly all of your needs involving t-shirts, flyingporkapparel.com. FlyingPorkApparel.com. Designer t-shirts for naked bodies. Rated PG-13.
Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is Brian. With me is...
This is The Way.
Your name is The Way now? I'm calling you The Way for the rest of the episode.
So I'm pretty much going to... I'll throw out little slogans and quotes here and there.
All right.
It's Daryl, by the way.
Red Pill Daryl. I'm kidding. Anywho. All right. This is episode 256. We've got a bunch of shit to talk about this week. We're going to review the Superman Man of Tomorrow animated feature that just dropped. We obviously have The Boys. We're quickly, I think, two more episodes after, like, tonight. And then we got a bunch of news. So. All right. How you doing?
Not too bad. It's Thursday.
We're recording on Thursday.
One of the things I told you, you know, before we started recording is this is definitely fall, and I'm sort of watching the sunset, been watching the sunset for the last, you know, 20 minutes or so, mm-hmm. and I just love this weather.
Yeah.
You know, I like summer. Don't get me wrong. I like summer for quite a few reasons. Baseball one, you know, other things. But I just love that, you know, just the smell of fall outside. And it's actually fall, you know. It took a while to get here, but we're officially in fall.
I think we're here right on time, to be honest. But yeah, I don't know. I like fall because it's my favorite time of year because I like cold weather. And I like the whole, like, yoga pants and boot combo that the ladies trot out. The Han Solo season, as it's affectionately called.
So what did I just say? This is The Way. So,
you said something kind of fruity about a sunset or something.
This is The Way.
Daryl likes long strolls in the evening at the fall sunsets, smelling bonfires. Ladies, he's single. Anyway, all right. Hey,
cuddling up to my Mandalorian pop, 10-inch pop that I just got in the mail.
Yeah, he's ready for fatherhood because of all the Baby Yoda stuff that he has. He's been practicing.
Yeah, it's getting a little bit disconcerting when I actually look at him. Like, wow, I have a lot of the child pops.
You're like, I have too much. There's too much.
Yeah, I think I might have to kind of, like, roll back on, I mean, just chill out for a bit for those.
Yeah, that's all right. No worries. Okay. So, this week we have everything I said. So we're going to start off. There has been, some new news about the Sandman series that's coming to Netflix.
So, question, are you a Sandman fan?
I absolutely am not, but I was super intrigued by this headline, which is why I clicked on it so it's Liam Hemsworth and I think it's Dockery Montgomery, is how you pronounce that. Dockery. Montgomery in running to play the Corinthian in Netflix's The Sandman. So I found this interesting because I'm not a huge, like, Liam Hemsworth guy. Like, I prefer the other two Hemsworth brothers to Liam. And then Dockery Montgomery, is one of the best parts of Stranger Things. And he was probably the second or third best part, of the new Power Rangers movie. So I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I think the fact that Corinthium is like, or the Corinthian, sorry, is, you know, a nightmare created by Morpheus. And it says here to be the darkness and the fear of the darkness in every human heart. I feel like he would be better fit for that role than Liam Hemsworth.
I 100% agree with that. I don't dislike Gale/Liam Hemsworth, you know, for those Hunger Games fans. But to your point, I think his brothers are, you know, when we talk about the superior Amell.
Yeah.
It's the same thing in the sense of, it sounds like we're denigrating him, but we're not. It's just that the other two are to me at least, and to you as well, just better. Now, again, I think he's fine. I just think, you know, reading about the role, Montgomery and what he did, Montgomery did on Stranger Things, I could see him in that role.
Yeah. And absolutely. So I'm not going to say, like, I mean, Chris is better. Definitely. Like Luke, you know, Luke Hemsworth is great, or was great. We don't know if he's coming back yet for Westworld, but, Liam is
talking about his performance in Thor Ragnarok.
Well, that too, but I mean, Liam is just not my cup of tea. And I didn't like him in the Expendables. I was not Team Gale in the Hunger Games movies because of him. I think I'd go the other way. I'd go with the kind of the guy who's like lesser known, but is like has that Netflix built-in audience.
And that's another good point. That's a very good point as far as the Netflix audience. So, not a fan of... I think I do actually have the first volume of Sandman somewhere around here.
Yeah.
I've tried reading it in the past, and it's just... Again, it might be one of those you just have to power through parts of it until it really catches you, at least for me. And again, I know people love this. You know,
yeah.
I hear about it all the time.
So
again, I just couldn't really get into it. And that was a few years ago, granted. So sure. I might try to, reading about this, I'm very curious to see what Netflix does with this.
So I have a hot take. I am a Neil Gaiman novel fan, not a Neil Gaiman comic book writer fan.
I like his novels. Yeah.
So, like the Norse mythology thing he did is probably my favorite thing he's ever done other than
I remember when that came out, and I think I actually might have to get that
because it's really good. And get the audiobook. The audiobook is great. So
because I'm a mythology fan in right. general. I on my nightstand I have, you know, a couple books, and one of them mm-hmm. was Norse mythology. Nice. So and actually I have a couple credits left.
Yeah,
still.
It's really good. And then obviously Good Omens with Terry Pritchard was the book was great, the TV series not so much. So I don't know, I just thought this was something interesting to kind of open with real quick. I think, you know, Montgomery makes sense in the role, and like he's super charismatic, you know, and as is it Billy, was that his name on Stranger Things? Like all the moms, like at the, like, just think of the scene when he's the lifeguard and all the moms are like, "Ooh, hey, how you doing?" And you know, it's that. So, and he kind of plays that dark brooding guy, like
right
thing That's, better. So
right. Exactly.
But yeah. All right. So the next one, it literally kind of just came through for us right before we went on, but Jamie Foxx is saying he's going to return as Electro in the MCU's Spider-Man 3. So everyone's assuming there's going to be a Spider-Verse now. I don't know if this is true. I'll be honest, I don't want this to be true. I want to forget The Amazing Spider-Man 2 was ever made.
I can't disagree with you on that. It's funny enough because I actually just watched a video from Emergency Awesome who he really does a good job of putting his videos together. And he was talking about some, and this is, I think, of this a video from a day or two ago.
Yeah.
I just happened to look at it. And he was talking about the, you know, the Into the Spider-Verse 2 and how, like, they had thought about doing some actual live action shots with, you know, Tom Holland and, you know, Tobey Maguire and Garfield.
Yeah.
And so it's just funny that, like, after watching that video this morning, you know, later this afternoon, this news comes across. I really hope it's not true either.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a fan of Jamie Foxx. I just don't want. And again, is this going to be out before or after Multiverse of Madness?
Who knows?
So that's the other, because I could see it could make sense, you know, depending on what happens with Doctor Strange. But still, I just don't want them to kind of, you know, reuse a villain from a movie that was
piss poor.
Yeah, that was not good.
Yeah.
Like, even though, you know, parts of Fox's performance were fine. I did like some of the things they did with Electro, but again, let's kind of, don't need this.
The only thing I liked about Electro was the look of Electro.
Yeah, I really liked the look
that
of
was
Electro.
It. Like, I thought Jamie Foxx, like, you know, was it Mark Webb who directed those movies? I thought Jamie Foxx is a much better actor than, like, what we got from him, and I don't blame Jamie Foxx for it. I blame the poor writing. I blame the poor script. I blame, or the poor directing. I blame the fact that Andrew Garfield turns out is not a very good actor. You know, so he didn't have a lot to work with there. And I don't know. I'm seeing, like, on Twitter, there's a guy saying, like, I'm not going to get excited for live action. Or he says, I'm not going to get excited for a live action Spider-Verse film until we get confirmation that Toby and or Andrew's coming back. But if that happens, yes, I will effing explode. No, I will not. I don't want either Toby or Andrew Garfield.
Why would you want either one of those?
Anywhere near the Spider-Man franchise anymore.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
To quote Ricky Bobby, it's mind-boggling. You know?
A boggling of the mind.
It literally bottles the mind. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I just don't understand, like, why people would be thirsty for that, to use a modern parlance.
I don't know. And no, it's so funny that, to me, his performance in Amazing Spider-Man 2, it seemed like it was misplaced and should have been in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man universe, because there was a silliness about it, mm-hmm. especially with, you know, the whole origin thing. That's one thing I really didn't like about it.
The electric eels.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's got to be a totem, right? It's got to have, like, an animal has to make all the villains. You have a octopus and a spider and a hunter and a vulture, right. And, you know, so I don't know. Like, I'm also not eager to revisit the Sam Raimi stuff, because he kind of shat the bed at the end of that too.
Well, he had him dancing
and crying constantly. Nobody wants a mopey Peter Parker. You hear me, Toby? Nobody wants a mopey Peter Parker.
One of the things I loved about Intro to Spider-Verse is where they showed the Spider-Man doing the dance, Tobey Maguire dance.
Yeah. That was funny, and it's a great meme now, but yeah. I don't know. All right, let's go on to some more Spider-Man news that has people actually mad. So, have you seen what this looks like?
Yeah, I saw the first, like, it's like a 2-minute clip.
Okay, so in the PlayStation, for the PlayStation 5, they're remastering Marvel's Spider-Man, the game that just came out last year, that Daryl has finished, and I'm still at 40%. But they are going to do a new, I guess, digital face or whatever for Peter Parker. And the face that they picked is like 10 years younger looking than the Peter Parker that they had, who was 25. And the scene that they shared was him and Doc sharing a drink. And it's like, Doc, why are you giving a 12-year-old some liquor, dude? Like, you know, are you that? That's not evil. That's just dumb. The police are going to come and shut you down. So they'll get you for that. Super villainy, you know, whatever. But you give an alcohol to a kid, they won't abide that.
Yeah, unless you're in Hollywood. But anyway.
Well, let's forget about that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not like one. I think the face, like, looks good. But, like, save it for a different game. Like, stick with what you got.
My only problem with that, and again, I love the Spider-Man game, it took me a while to actually get used to the Peter Parker face, because there was a stiffness about it that when I originally started playing it back in, you know, a couple years ago. This face would have been fine if it was, you know, Spider-Man in college or, you know, just out of high school.
Yeah.
The problem, and to your point, talking about the drink, that's the thing. This is a Spider-Man in his early to mid-20s, well, more like early, late 20s. Excuse me. And then now he looks like he's 16.
Yeah. So it kind of looks like Tom Holland.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's too much. It's too much of a change. Now, to be fair, like, you don't play Spider-Man games to look at Peter Parker's stupid face. You're playing to be Spider-Man. And so, like, I typically skip like a bunch of cutscenes because I just can't sit through them. Zero patience.
Dude, like you're missing the story.
I mean, like, so like I normally die at least once. So when I have to sit through the cutscene for a second time, I'm like, ugh.
Oh, enough. No. Oh, that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Like, I'll watch it the first time. That, but, yeah.
Okay. I was going to call you an Uber normie right there.
Yeah. I'm definitely a normie. I would never call myself a gamer. You know, but yeah. So I don't know. I think the whole outrage around this is misplaced. There's better things to be outraged about, which will come with our next story.
100%.
But people, yeah.
Again, people tend to games, movies, whatever, tend to, you know, the whole mountain out of a molehill. Yeah. That's for, especially with social media nowadays. And again, if you have an issue with it, like, again, we both said, like, the face is too young. But that's pretty much all I'm going with in the sense of, like, I probably would never speak of this again unless somebody asked me about it.
They just said, you know, and their whole point was like, well, it fit the actor's face better. Like, the actor who was doing the mocap, like, this better fit his face. Fine, whatever. Just, you know, give him some sand lines, you know, like, you know, weather his face like he's been, you know, riding Shai Hulud. And, you know, like, he's calling worms. He age him up a little bit. He's out in the sun all day. Arrakis is a hot place.
But yeah, it's.
Could you imagine Spider-Man on Arrakis?
Oh man, he can't swing on anything.
No, he'd have to swing from worm to worm. Anyway, so I'm halfway through. So I finished Dune. I'm halfway through Dune Messiah already. So
yeah, I need to. Well, see, my book, Battleground, the latest Dresden Files book came in yesterday, and
it, yeah,
I've been kind of reading that and then listening to like the book Words of Rage, this Brandon Sanderson series. So
cool.
That's kind of where my book sense have been. Has
yeah.
Been.
I'm going through all the Frank Herbert Dunes before December 18th. So
keep that date.
Yes. Keep that date. I saw a really funny thing talking about, you know, why is everybody so excited for Dune? The first movie was a flop. Denis Villeneuve's, Blade Runner movie was a flop. They're releasing it December during a pandemic because it's going to be a flop. And they're like, what? It was during a pandemic. It wasn't a flop. So,
that's kind of funny.
I mean, the David Lynch Dune is not Dune. Like, it's stupid. Anyway. All right. So let's move on to the next one because I want to talk about this one for a little bit. So the Disney Plus, as the guys from The Watch like to say, have found their Ms. Marvel, Iman Vellani, who looks very Ms. Marvelish. Let's be honest.
Yeah,
I mean,
she's
the right like look and feel from the comic. But so I found this article on Bounding Into Comics, and it says report Marvel Studios wanted to stay true to the character in the casting of Ms. Marvel with actress Iman Vellani. Great. Zero issues with that. I don't think she's done anything of note.
I couldn't find anything on her.
So I'm always excited when it's a new actor coming in to take on a role. So you know, zero issues there. I have zero issues with Ms. Marvel. I think she was kind of what they were hoping would be the flagship for the Inhuman push to wipe out the X-Men as far as pop culture goes, when they didn't think they were ever going to get the rights back from 20th Century Fox. And now that they did, and you know, the Inhumans are less and less and less and less and less and less and less of a thing, as they build mutant kind back up with, you know, House of X, Powers of X, Sword of X, you know, and so, you know, I think this is fine. And, you know, I think one thing that people need to remember though is the book doesn't sell. She's not like, she's a popular character outside of comics, which is why I think they have a chance at making a really good movie, because there's not a lot of source material to really come from. The place where I have enjoyed Ms. Marvel the most is as the leader of the champions, the young group of superheroes who looked at the older superheroes and were like, you guys don't get it. You're not actually heroes anymore. All you do is fight each other and damage things. We're going to go in and we're actually going to like change the world. And, you know, it was her and Cyclops and Nova and Viv, Vision's daughter, Amadeus Cho. There's someone else I'm forgetting. But it was, you know, and it was a really good comic. And it was cool. They had a Hulk, so they were a pseudo Avengers team. But this article, and I'm interested in your take on this, because this article talks about how they were, you know, and I'll repeat the phrase. They wanted to stay true to the character. What about all the characters that they don't want to stay true to? Why is it such a point of emphasis for Ms. Marvel that they stay quote unquote true to the character?
Oh, there's a quick easy it's because it's an ethnic character.
I mean, there's plenty of other ethnic characters although, that they haven't been true to, though.
I was about to say, although that take that back, because so when I was reading this article, and I have zero experience with Ms. Marvel in the actual comic world. I think you've told me about that Champion series, and I might actually have to check it out, because I will say watching the iteration of Ms. Marvel in the Avengers game has really piqued my interest in the character.
Yeah, she's a great character in the game. She's a great point of view character to have. She's the Kitty Pryde.
Yes. So that, and again, this was when we did the review of the game, one of the things I said is I wasn't expecting a story that I was going to be captured in like mm-hmm. I have been in this story.
Yeah.
Yes, they've made a lot of missteps and they're trying to clean it up. But so that's my biggest, you know, positive for her. And like as you like you said, I do like seeing newcomers in roles, just because they don't have that baggage of, oh well, you know, this person was in this and this. I don't know if this person can do this because of this role. This is almost like a brand spanking new, you know, just set tabula rasa for this actress. And I mean, I really hope she does well. Now, with that being said, the article itself, when I first started reading it, I thought, you know, they were just going to kind of, I thought they went over too much in the sense of how they had it talking about, you know, what's the word you want to say? The changing of characters, of character genders, of character races, and all that stuff.
Well, let's use Eric July's phrase, the tokenism of characters. The
tokenization, yes. So,
tokenization, thank you. You know, like, here's one thing. The Eternals, nobody knows who the Eternals are. Most comic book people don't know who the Eternals are.
I have no clue who they are.
The Eternals are boring. Like, the fact that they're making an Eternals movie, again, is mind-boggling to me. I don't care that they're gender-swapping and race-bending the characters.
Yeah.
I'm just curious as, like, why they had to make a point of emphasis here. Because, like, there's no other way you could have done this character. You weren't going to cast Scarlett Johansson to play a New Jersey... I think she's Pakistani or something. Like, you know, she's Asian of some flavor. And, you know, they're not going to cast like ScarJo to play that kind of role. They're not going to cast, what's her name? Hermione Granger. Emma Watson.
Emma,
you know, they're not going to cast Emma Watson. Frost. I almost said Emma Caulfield. anyway.
Anya.
Yeah, Anya. but you know, they're not going to do that. Like that, like her race to this character is key to who she is, and the Marvel game really plays it well. Like about like you know, her from her costume to her thoughts on things to, you know, the way she acts, and you know, I mean, she's like I kind of disagree with her, July. I don't think she's a token character. I think Ms. Marvel was something that they abandoned from Carol Danvers, and this girl was a fan of Carol's as Ms. Marvel. She saw it wasn't being used and she did it as like a tribute, and it stuck. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. She is the Jason Todd of the Ms. Marvel. She's the second one, or actually no, let's rephrase that. She's the third one. Cause Monica Rambeau,
right.
Anyway, she's the Tim Drake. She's the Tim Drake. And actually, like, she kind of does, like, fit with the Tim Drake, like, mythos as far as, like, she's the kid that was the fan. She figured stuff out. She became the character, you know, bada boom, bada bing. You know, but if they're going to make these points of emphasis, then they have to take certain characters and be like, we have to stick to this. Like, they just do. Like, you know, the whole thing with Aldous Hodge playing Hawkman, you know, I don't care at all. But the fact that Hawkman has been a white blonde haired dude his entire 65 year run, that's got to count for something, right? Or am I just reading too much into it?
Well, I will say this about the Hawkman one, and I wrote this comment on, you know, somewhere, I don't even remember. They've said Hawkman, but I haven't read anywhere where they actually said he was playing Carter Hall, because. Yeah. I don't know if the Black Adam movie is going to be taking place more in the past. And when I say the past, I mean like the distant past versus like in the present. So if he's playing Carter Hall, the Carter Hall that has been, even though, again, this is not a character mm-hmm. that I am, you know, I love or anything like right. that. So this is one of those changes, because and I'm a fan of Aldous Hodge too. So this is one of those changes in, you know, in, without, if it was without context, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't care about, in the sense of, you know, I don't know this character. But it is a pattern that we see in a lot of these movies and shows and, you know, and comics too, where you change the character around for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to say it's for diversity when, again, let's go back to the Captain Marvel. We all know who the original Captain Marvel was. Yeah. It was not Carol Danvers.
No.
It was Monica Rambeau.
And before that, it was an alien named Mar-Vell from
Mar-Vell,
you know, right. the Kree Empire.
Right. So you have all these, this is where they get stuck, is where when they say something like, we want to stay true to the character. So is it only this character because of her, you know, her gender and skin tone? Is that the only reason? Which, again, like you said, there is really no choice, because it's so inherent in her character, where she comes from, her background. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, when you see, you know, the Marvel Encyclopedia or even the DC Encyclopedia, there are plenty of characters you can pull here and there and say, hey, this is, we're going to use this character, because if you're talking about diversity and stuff like that, I mean, you can use that have their backgrounds, like, you know, one of your favorites you were talking about, for example, you know, when we were talking the other day, was Static, who, you know, he's had a cartoon, but you know, he's never been in a live action thing.
No, I mean, he's been on the Young Justice cartoon. He had his own cartoon, which had nothing to do with his comic, and, you know, he had the Milestone run and then his new 52 run, and, you know, he's popped up here and there, but being black is essential to his story,
right?
But here's the thing, it's Dwayne McDuffie made a brand new character, right? Like, the in the comics, they took Bobby Drake and made him gay. Like, why? Like, Bendis, just make a new character. Make a cool new character, and then you could make him fall in love with the Inhuman boy like you did with Bobby Drake. It doesn't have to just be, you know, you don't have to just change things on a whim for characters that people have followed for years. Wally West is a great example. You know, because there's a black Wally West in the comics. There was a black Wally West on TV. You know, and Wally West was the Flash for 30 years. And then, you know, they brought Barry Allen back, and all of a sudden, you know, he had to go. And there's a whole thing, too, about, like, gingers. I don't know if you've noticed, they always replace gingers with black people.
I'm going to have to think about that.
So, I mean, there's just, like, a ton of that, you know, like, if you look at Spider-Man, the MCU, they replaced Mary Jane, a ginger, with Zendaya, you know, it's a thing that happens, and, you know, but it's nothing to, here's the thing though. It's nothing to get super bent out of shape about. I'm just asking the question. I'm asking, like,
right,
why can't you say this character who's been fundamental to fandom for 70 years, all of a sudden you have to change it?
And I think one of the terms that people use a lot, and it kind of is lazy in and of itself, and I think, you know, when I said lazy, is when people say lazy writing.
Yeah.
And it, because it's a bucket of when people in comments and stuff don't want to explain, or a lot of times they don't know how to explain what they mean, so they just say lazy writing.
Yeah.
This is an example of lazy writing. And the reason I say that is because what they're trying to do when they do this, and this is what we're goes into what Eric July is saying, is they are trying to capitalize on the history already established. Mm-hmm. So you know the character, and you know, they just, you just shade in the character a little bit differently, or if, you know, if they want to change the character sex, they do that. But trying to capitalize on what has already been established, so they don't necessarily have to go through that work to establish the character, make the character interesting so that character can stick. Because let's be honest, there are tons of characters that don't stick, and they are of all races and yeah. nationalities.
Oh, absolutely.
And all that stuff. So I think that is lazy in and of itself when they do that, just because they're trying to use that, hey, you know, people like this character, so mm-hmm. hey, if we, you know, change this, that, or the other, we don't have to do all the hard work of, you know, building that character up.
Right. I mean, and I'll give some examples.
Bugs me.
Starbuck, Kara Thrace, worked. Boomer, worked. Madeline Stilwell on The Boys, worked. Mallory Grace on The Boys, worked. Stormfront on The Boys, works. Right? But right. It's not because they went and said, oh, we're just going to gender swap. They thought about it. They made the characters were they had the same name, but they were new characters. Because
right.
Matt Mallory's story is the closest to the version in the comic, you know, but it makes more sense. Like, a grandmother would definitely be more pissed off about her grandkids getting burned alive. You know, Madeline Stilwell controlling Homelander through, you know, sex and things like that definitely makes more sense than some dude who just yells at him and degrades him, you know.
Right.
You know, it like that stuff works. Katie Sackhoff is a goddamn treasure and amazing, and you know that just works.
Yeah, and again, that goes to, so a lot of this, you know, the swapping and the gender bending, a lot of it is followed by poor writing.
Mm-hmm.
And you just gave all of these examples of doing the exact same thing but having great writing.
Yeah, but like, so let's go to The Flash and look at Kieran, right? That's his name, Kieran, who played Wally West.
Oh yes, right.
Awful. He was a horrible Wally West. He was a horrible addition to the show. He dragged it down every time he was on screen. And, you know, they wrote him off. And then he went and they tried to do the same thing on Guardians. And thankfully, he's like, no, I don't want to do superhero stuff anymore. I don't know. You know, like, I think he might be back, but I'm certainly not watching to find out.
Yeah. And again, The Flash, I don't know if that's a good example. And the reason I say that, because The Flash's writing has always been iffy in and of itself.
At best.
Even though I did like it for the first couple years.
Yeah.
The writing overall on that show was, at the best of times, it was average.
So I was thinking about The Flash the other day. The reason that I liked it so much, and I think you're going to agree with this statement, is because Grant Gustin is so likable. He put that entire like CW universe on his shoulders and ran Barry Ran. Just plain and simple.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I watched The Flash because of him.
So, like, that's the only thing I miss about, like, not watching The Flash anymore, is inviting Grant Gustin into my living room 22 weeks a year.
Yeah. So 100% agree with that.
Grant, you're awesome. I'm sorry that the Brillantiverse doesn't do better by you. Plain and simple. All right. So, yeah, I don't know. Just kind of, it's weird. This article kind of, like, I don't know. It didn't trigger me, you know, but it just, like, left me with more questions than I had answers for. And I felt like it was something that we could talk about. And,
yeah,
you know,
and
I don't have any issues. Like, I'm definitely, like, kind of excited what they do with the Ms. Marvel. Please don't, like, take the photoshopped version of her face with the mask as thinking that's what she's going to look like in the costume. Because people are really bad at Photoshop. Let's just put that out there.
I've noticed that a lot. Yeah, you know, every now and then you'll run into people that are just exceptional with it, but 98% of the 99% of the internet, it's not good.
Yeah, I don't go and try. I use Photoshop for work, right? Like, but I'm not like an artist. I don't go and draw and, like, you know, things like that. But, like, I know how to manipulate things. I cut things. I, you know, do whatever I need to do. But, you know, my main tool is Sketch. But anyway, like, there, I've seen so many pictures, and I saw some comments about, like, oh, she looks awful in the costume. It's like, that's not the costume. It's some jabroni did a hack Photoshop job where they tried to badly stick a mask on her face that doesn't even contour to her face. And that's not what the mask is going to look like. And this isn't what her hair is going to look like. You know, give it time. I never judge the still shot of a uniform that we see. I always wait until I get to see it in motion before I decide to hate it.
I like how you just went with the default before I decide to hate it.
I mean, most of them are awful. I honestly, like, most cosplayers do much better costumes. Batman.
Some of these cosplayers, man, I follow a couple of them on Instagram, and it's, yeah, it's like, why don't they have jobs and,
yeah,
you know, getting some of this shit together,
right,
in some of these shows.
I mean, if you've ever watched the Bat in the Sun channel, with the superhero beatdowns that they do, that, like, those costumes, they're comic accurate and movie ready. It's great. It's so great what they do. You should definitely check that one out. So, all right, let's move on to tomorrow.
I love you tomorrow. You'll always be a day away. That's for free, y'all.
Ow, okay. Ow. Dude, I think there's blood coming out of the ear of my headphone. So, no, I'm kidding. That was nice. Thank you. I'm going to make that your ringtone now. You think I'm kidding?
Anything you say, I
hey, like, if I say this. I'm going to do it, I do it. Like, I'm a man of my word. So I live by Fremen code. If I say it, it's contract.
This is the way.
No, Fremen, not Mandalorian. Anyway, all right. So I decided to buy Superman Man of Tomorrow on Sunday, last Sunday. And I watched it, and I messaged you like, hey, do you mind buying this movie so we can watch it? So we can talk about it. And so I appreciate you buying it. How much was it on Vudu?
$10.
Okay, great. It was $10 on iTunes as well. So I love the Superman animated movies. I like, of all the DC Superman or all the DC animated movies, the standalone Superman ones are my favorite.
I'm trying to think of the ones that I've watched Superman versus the Elite, which I really, really, really
that's top of the pile for me.
Yeah, that was so good.
But like Batman Under the Red Hood is really good. There's some really good Batman ones too, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But the Superman ones, you've got Superman versus the Elite. You have All-Star Superman. You have the rise and death of the death and rise of Superman. You have Reign of the Superman. You've got, you know, there's just a ton of them out there. You've even got the weird little Batman versus or Batman Superman Public Enemies one that's really good. So when I saw this, I was like, okay, cool. And then I saw that Parasite was the villain. I was like, okay, cool. And then I saw Lobo was in it. And I was like, okay, cool. So I'm just gonna say I super enjoyed this movie. I thought it was a really cool story. It kind of mixed up a bunch of stuff that we've had over the years, and that is Superman's origins and things like that, which I think, so it kind of felt like an original story. That was cool. And I liked the change in art that they've done from like the Young Justice look, that's been perpetrating through the DC movies for the last decade or so. I really liked the artwork.
I really enjoyed the animation as well. Again, because this is anytime you're doing animation and, well, not necessarily animation, but visual media, like, mm-hmm. you know, animated movies or comic books, that's a big thing with me. I know sometimes I don't give things necessarily the same kind of, you know, attention I would if something doesn't catch my eye visually in those media. I don't necessarily give it the same attention I would as if it does catch my eye, which mm-hmm. that means I'm probably missing out on some really good stories.
Yeah.
And I am trying to expand my horizons in that regard. So with this, I really enjoyed the animation. Mm-hmm. I like the character models, and I will say the one thing that kind of threw me off when I first heard it, and I was going to say this before we start, is I don't know who he was, but who's the voice of Lex Luthor?
Zachary Quinto.
Okay.
Didn't work.
It did not work.
That's the only thing that didn't work in this movie.
Yeah.
And it was because he's got that like nasally, like kind of like slow cadence to his voice. Like it sounded like Spock.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, Superman, that is not logical. You know, it was kind of like, eh. I'm a big Clancy Brown, Lex Luthor fan, so I compare everything to that.
Oh, I love his Clancy Brown's voice.
He's the, like, Kevin Conroy is the one true Batman. Clancy Brown is the one true Lex Luthor. I will say, so Darren Criss, who I had never heard of before I saw this, because apparently he was on Glee, and I've never watched Glee. Was awesome.
First couple seasons. He was really good.
Awesome as the difference between Superman and Clark, and then when he was like projecting his voice as Superman, it was really really cool. I thought he did a great job, and he did a really good job showing emotion. Neil Flynn, who was Jonathan Kent, was the janitor on Scrubs.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I when I heard his voice, I'm thinking I know this guy.
So,
and he's been in a lot of other stuff.
Absolutely. But yeah.
I know this guy from somewhere, and then I have to look it up.
Bellamy Young, who is just a great voice actress, she's been in way too many things to name, was Martha Kent. And the three of them had like a really good like thing. Like, you know, like I don't know what it is, but that was it, sort of a thing.
Right.
And I liked how Neil Flynn had a bit of a, you know, country accent, and then Bellamy Young's Martha Kent didn't have any accent because, you know, Martha came from the city, like. So they told a whole bunch of story right there without having to tell me anything.
Yeah.
But that was cool. And yeah. Oh, real quick, Bellamy Young had the best line in the movie.
What's that?
When she gave Clark the costume, she was talking about how like she made it out of the only material she's known that has been to space. She made a cape, and then she made the rest of the pattern off of that nice Batman fellow from the news. And I missed it the first time I watched it.
So funny thing is, when I, like, you know, you're talking about, you know, Jonathan and Martha, I couldn't help but juxtapose what they did with them here versus what they did with them in Man of Steel.
You mean the monsters that were the Kents?
Yeah.
So the true villains of Man of Steel.
Yeah, and again, you know, I'm a huge fan of the Man of Steel, a huge fan.
Oh yeah.
But I can point out the issues I have with it. You know, it's not a 10 out of 10. It has some serious issues. So it was really nice to, and we've seen this in some of the other Superman cartoons or animated films as well, where and I know you say, would you say, you know, you curse Richard Donner because he's kind of made. When he did that in the original Superman, the movie, it kind of set off a trend that you have to kill Jonathan Kent.
Right.
Don't you?
And they didn't. So this is, there was some All-Star Superman in here. There was some, John Byrne's Man of Steel in here. There was some, J. Michael Straczynski's, Earth One Superman in here. And you know, it was really, really interesting. There was a little bit of New 52 in here. There was a little bit of Rebirth in here. It was good. Alessandro Daddario, who played Lex Luthor, was awesome.
Lois Lane.
Oh, sorry. What I said, Lex Luthor. I got the two L's right. Come on. Who played Lois Lane was great. Ryan Hurst, like we said, was great as Lobo. Ike Amadi as Martian Manhunter was freaking awesome.
Oh, man. I love his voice. Yeah.
Rudy Jones. Rudy Jones. Brett Dalton, who was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., played Rudy Jones / Parasite. He was great, too. There was, like, honestly, the only weak part of this movie was Zachary Quinto, and he was in it for so little it didn't matter.
Right. And the other thing that I won't say I had an issue with, but I've had issues with this in certain movies and, you know, other comics and books and stuff, where they make the villain or the antagonist so massive from a size standpoint. And again, this is what I would call a small gripe. Although what I loved about that was, and I kind of saw it coming, but what I loved is when he stands in front of Parasite and tries to catch the humanity, not only of the Parasite, the man, but the humanity that he took from Clark. And when Parasite sees his family there, and there's that, you know, that explosion at the plant, little things like that make this much more than just, you know, a fun romp.
Mm-hmm.
in the sense of, hey, this is just going to be a fun time, you know, a lot of action and all that stuff.
Well, I thought
there's a lot of humanity in it.
Yeah, I thought the way he was dealing with his powers, because like he did not learn who he was. There was no like, oh, you know, he found out who he was on the farm a la Smallville, you know, or a la the Donner movies. He found out later because of Lobo, which I thought was a really cool twist. I thought Martian Manhunter was a really good addition to this, as kind of his superhero Sherpa, if you will. And I don't want to spoil too much, but I will say, like, the take on Parasite was really cool, and the Kaiju Parasite was freaking awesome. I did not think I was going to like that as much as I did.
Yeah, and again, this is another one of those examples where I'm like, I don't know the history of that character, Parasite. I've seen it in some other things before. Oh, it wasn't Parasite in Smallville?
He was in Smallville.
There was
a Parasite episode. He was in the All-Star Superman Parasite was really, really good. Parasite and Superman, yeah. The Animated Adventures was really good. Parasite's always been really good in the comics. He's my favorite Superman villain because he's the one who brings out the most humanity in Clark, because he's the one who can actually hurt Clark with just a touch.
Right.
And you know, there's no other villain like that. Like, everyone else needs kryptonite to hurt Superman. And Parasite can do it with a touch. And I find the dynamic between the two of those characters, because Clark Superman knows, and I'm not going to spoil too much, but Clark Superman knows going in, he's putting himself at peril for everybody else.
Right.
But he's still going to do what he would. Yeah.
Going to do it.
Yeah. He's still going to do it. And, you know, yeah. like you said there with the whole thing with the family and stuff, he knew what was going to happen. He knew he knew there were two outcomes. He was either going to be right or he was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
you know what? Like Thor said, that's what heroes do.
Get other people killed. Oh, wait, no, sorry.
But
wrong show.
Ryan Hurst, you know, we didn't mention him as much.
Yeah.
Ryan Hurst was having so much fun as Lobo.
Dude,
you could absolutely feel that.
So I always thought Brad Garrett was the best Lobo Superman's Adventure, Superman Adventures cartoon, or The Adventures of Superman. But Ryan Hurst is my new favorite Lobo.
He was. I told you what happened. You know, I right after the movie, I just went on Amazon and got a $8 Lobo pop.
Yeah, you didn't go watch Obi get killed in prison.
Why do you do stuff like this?
I don't know. I mean, it's where my mind goes. No, but he was great. The motorcycle was great. The whole thing. I will say the cursing was a shock. I was surprised that there was so much cursing.
I was very surprised.
The scene, and again, I don't want to spoil it, but the scene with Martian Manhunter and Parasite was awesome and terrifying.
Yes.
I'll just put it like that. So Chris Palmer was the director. Tim Sheridan was the writer. I think they freaking killed it, and I want to see more of this Superman.
Yeah, I really do. I would love for them to continue this story.
Yeah.
And not just kind of do another Superman story. But, like, mm-hmm. I would love for them to continue this with the same cast.
Yeah.
Maybe change, you know, one change.
You don't have to have Lex Luthor in every Superman movie.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. There's, you know, his menagerie of opposition is large enough where you don't need. It's actually better if you have, you know, have Lex Luthor just kind of pop up here and there.
Yeah, peripheral.
But I would, I would definitely love to see this particular story continued on in another anime.
I want to see Mxyzptlk as the next villain in this Superman line.
That's another one that was in Smallville.
Yeah, he was great in Smallville too. But I don't know. I just really liked it. I thought it was really good. I've watched it 2.5 times.
Yeah, this is one of those I will watch again.
Yeah.
And I can't always say that with movies that I've gotten. Or anything like there are times where I see a movie and I say, yep, I like it or I don't like it, you know, I'm not going to ever watch it again.
Yeah, like I thought, like, oh, I bought the pack of Happy Death Day, and I'm like, sweet, I'm going to watch both Happy Death Day movies. I still have not watched them. I've owned them both for like 6 months. So, and they were on HBO for a long time, and I still didn't watch them. So, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I think it's a solid 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I have it at 8 as well.
Cool. Cool, cool.
8 capes out of 10.
8 capes out of 10. Nice.
That's a lot of capes.
Yeah, so check it out. It's video on demand right now. So it's well worth the purchase. It's $10 right now, worth buying. All right. So we've got whatever the episode before the penultimate episode is called, that's what this one was. The Boys, The Bloody Doors Off. A lot happened in this episode. A lot happened.
Okay, the title of this episode is apropos because with all the stuff that happened, they did pretty much blow the bloody doors off.
Yes.
Off everything that we've come to expect from The Boys.
Can I read the summary real quick?
Yes,
because the summary is the biggest summary we've gotten so far. It says, while Butcher, Huey, and Annie stand guard, Mother's Milk, Frenchie, and Kimiko infiltrate Sage Grove and discover captive Compound V patients. Frenchie recognizes an orderly as Lamplighter, causing a scuffle that leads to patients breaking out. An escaped patient injures Huey, forces Starlight and Butcher to rush him to hospital. Forced to work together with Lamplighter, he informs the boys that Vought is attempting to stabilize Compound V in adult subjects. Lamplighter is spared by Mallory at Frenchie's behest over his remorse for killing her grandchildren. Stormfront tells Homelander she was the first successful Compound V subject and founder Frederick Vought's widow, wanting him to lead the superpower to world domination. Maeve obtains a video of Homelander abandoning the plane as leverage against him. Unstable patient Cindy escapes Sage Grove. A-Train is lured into the Church of the Collective. I mean, so much happened there. So much. And I think we need to leave Homelander until the end again, because that's been kind of a fun little thing we've been doing lately.
And I'm kind of disappointed that they didn't even mention Love Sausage.
Dude, let's not spoil Love Sausage.
Okay.
Just no Love Sausage. Just Love Sausage. That's all you need to know.
Okay, yeah.
So when I watched it again last night, I could not stop laughing at that scene because of Love Sausage.
And hold on, the funniest thing for me, well, first of all, that is just, that whole thing is hilarious. But Frenchie's face, and then you pan over to Mother's Milk, yeah, and what he says is like,
"Yeah,
was that what I think it was?"
Yeah. So, all right, you're gonna spoil it if you go too far.
Yeah.
So, all right, so Huey, Butcher, and Annie, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, had a pretty nice little adventure together, don't you think?
Yeah, and I will say that Annie shows the hardness that she's getting, you know, to her character, you know, from all the stuff she's experiencing.
Yeah, thanks, Vought.
In a couple ways. And the first way, and when it first starts, is when she actually stands up to Butcher.
Yeah.
In a way that someone needed to stand up to him in that way. And I've always thought, and again, I don't know if I've said this since, you know, we started reviewing season two, but I've always thought that he has a lot more in common than he thinks with Homelander.
Oh yeah.
And for someone to actually put that into words, I love that scene just because she's like, oh yeah, you're just nothing but a bigot and a bully. Which he absolutely is.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I said that last year. I was like, he is not a good guy. Not at all.
He's not a hero.
No. Just because he's like in that league of protagonists, he is not a good – he's not someone that you're like – well, I mean, I guess we're rooting for him, but at the same time, it's like, dude, I would not want to be partners with him.
No.
Because I wouldn't trust him.
No, not at all. No, he was like the two of them were really good this episode too, because like when they had the interaction with that guy in the middle of the forest on the abandoned road, and you know, he's smiling at her and she's like, don't give me that smile, don't give me respect. Like, you know,
yeah.
and she's begrudgingly happy that she's got his respect though. So We did learn what her weakness was, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, I didn't, and thinking back, I didn't realize that she actually had that.
Yeah.
Which, because it's one of those things you never think about, and it's like,
so
just
my,
because she's always been in a situation where, you know, she's had
right.
access to power.
So my curiosity, though, is like, is she still, like, nigh invulnerable, like, when she's not around electricity, or is she just a regular person?
Well, and again, I was just going to say, I think it's just she can't use her electrical abilities, but again, who knows?
Yeah.
Like, that's one thing they didn't really give us more about, but I'm thinking it's just her electrical abilities.
Okay.
But again, like I said, who knows?
Yeah. Who really knows?
But, and then, you know, they fully bond when they're, you know, when they, you know, get Huey to
When they're saving Huey's life.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, when they get to a hospital and they're kind of bonding over, you know, some of the silly things he does or about him.
Right.
And then she says, neither one of us are good enough for him.
Yeah. That was a good moment. And they both kind of agreed and, you know, and then they did it right on top of him. I thought that was really weird, but hey, what, to each their own, right? I'm kidding. That didn't happen.
That's fanfic right there.
That is total fanfic. So, Mother Smoke, Frenchie, and Kimiko definitely going undercover in Sage Grove was a treat, so to speak. Frenchie just, like, we got Frenchie's backstory in this episode too.
I love how they did the backstory.
Was really good the way they tied it in, and we learned so, so much. And, you know, Marvin's Mother's Milk, his realization of why Frenchie kind of abandoned his post, so to speak, was really, really good as well, and kind of heartbreaking at the same time. It's been one of these seasons that we've learned so much more after they did the pseudo world building in season one, and now they're just, you know, no pun intended, blowing the doors off of this world and showing us everything.
Yeah, I love, I love Frenchie's character. I love most of these characters in some way, shape, or form, and not necessarily in the sense of I love rooting for them, because I love Homelander's character, and he is a slime.
Homelander might be my favorite character. I always say it's Starlight because, like, I'm afraid to say it's Homelander, but I think Homelander is my favorite character.
Oh, I absolutely love and Anthony Starr and his, but watching Frenchie, you know, and seeing just. One, I actually also like kind of like that when they went back in time and saw we saw the boys together.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing what happened and seeing the pain and everything that Frenchie has been carrying with, you know, with over all these years.
Yeah.
And then when Mother's Milk was like, dude, why didn't you tell us? We would let you off the hook.
Right.
And he's like, what makes you think I want to be let off the hook? Yeah. I mean, that was such a one of those.
It was a really cool moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was really cool. I liked how him and Kimiko finally made up. I want to make sure I get the right Ashmore, Sean Ashmore. As Lamplighter was really good in the scene in the past where he came in and they're all laughing at him. They're like, and he's, you know, he's like, why am I here? And they have some sort of dirt on him. So I hope we figure out what that is soon. Because nothing stays secret in this world.
Right. And that was another example of good writing where, you know, they've put Lamplighter as this, you know, oh, you like the Torch Children.
Mm-hmm.
You like the Torch Children. And we find out that he's, in a way, suffering from his own guilt. You know, the same way Frenchie is when he's like, I didn't know. And Sean Ashmore's face on that and his delivery.
Yeah, it was really good. You really felt for him. You know, you all of a sudden felt sorry for him, even though you didn't want to.
Yes. And that's, you know, that's one of those things. And we talk about it with Homelander a lot in the sense of it's good acting. It's great writing and it's great acting where a character that's, you know, is the bad guy. And they still can, you know, touch that humanity on you, where you say, okay, I feel kind of bad for this person, even though I'm still not a fan of, you know, what they do, but I actually kind of feel bad for this person.
So,
and that scene, he did a good job.
So Anselm Richardson wrote this episode and it was directed by Sarah Boyd. And, like, they've been in a bunch of the episodes in one role or the other, right? They're I found them as like a really good team, because like this was a self-contained episode 100%, right? The only big thing was letting out what Vought was doing at Sage Grove with Compound V. The rest of it was like the transitional episode till the climax of the season, and it was about bringing Annie closer to the boys, and then letting us know about the continued degradation of the Seven. So Maeve, for example, had the video. So she's been we've been trying to figure out what she was doing with the Deep for the last couple episodes, and she sent him on a mission to find a phone or something from the wreckage of the plane that her and Homelander took down.
Yeah, and I like how they made it. I think it was a GoPro, which again, GoPros are one of those things that you can take underwater. Or whatever,
yeah. I think it was a GoPro. I couldn't tell if it was a GoPro or if that was just a charger for that particular phone.
It could have been. It might have been. But my question is this, and I think we'll get this answer. But I thought it was interesting that they never showed Elena's reaction they just showed her facial reaction, mm-hmm. but she never gives a verbal response to Maeve about what she's thinking when she sees what happened on the plane.
Right. I found that interesting as well, because I think she wants to be with Maeve, you know, at least that's how I look at this. Like, she wants to be with Maeve because she truly loves her, which is why it was such a problem for her with everything and why she kept pushing her away last season and earlier this season. And now that they're together, she's happy. And this is a way for Maeve to be happy. And that's what I think she really wants.
Yeah. And so that's one of those. And Maeve kind of tells us a lot about what everything that was going through her mind, which we already had an idea during that scene last season. A lot of stuff going through her mind. But having that kind of almost cliffhanger in the sense of, what is Elena going to say? Is she going to kind of, you know, shun her because she didn't stand up to Homelander? Is she going to be like, hey, right, I can't believe you did this, but I understand. What are we going to get? And having that kind of cliffhangery moment, you know, for Maeve's storyline, especially considering, you know, everything she's, you know, she's a character that's gotten, I think she originally started out as wanting to be a hero, kind of like Starlight. Mm-hmm. And that's why she's, you know, over, you know, these last two seasons has given Starlight really good advice.
Yeah.
Even if she said it with the, you know, kind of like that beaten down, downtrodden face and expression, she's telling her the things like, hey, I used to be like this.
Yep.
And she sees a little bit of herself in Starlight. So I want to see her get back to what she can be.
Yeah.
I don't know how far we're going to get with, you know, some of the stuff that happens in the comics versus what happens here, but
I think Maeve sees
that tunnel.
Yeah.
Or sees the light. You know, that light at the end of the tunnel.
Just hopefully it's not Vader's lightsaber.
Yeah.
So.
Or Homelander's eyes.
Oh, yeah. Or Stormfront's lightning bolts. So anyway, yeah, no, so that was cool. And then the whole like the Deep with A-Train and the Fresca. Like, what's with the Fresca, man? Is it like loaded? Is it, you know, I just want to know what's going on with the Fresca.
Yeah, so I love how the Deep set. Yeah, I imagine drowning you know, over and over.
Dude, Chase Crawford's delivery as the Deep is so good, because he's Charlie Brown with gills.
I've never looked at it that way, but
he's just like I thought of drowning you. Yeah, it was like it was sad. Like I felt bad for him. And he's like, you were always a dick to me. You were always mean. Like, you know, but here you are. And the dude Gorm Vesich, I think that's how you sound, say his name. He was on
wasn't he on ER?
He was on ER, yeah. He was Juliana Margulies' George Clooney replacement after Clooney left. And wow, that was I just dated myself. I think I watched like all 19 seasons of that show.
Whoa, dude.
Like on, like live, like every Thursday night, I was like all in on ER. I don't think I watched every episode. But anyway, no, the whole like Church of the Collective thing is super creepy, and the Fresca thing is super creepy. Bringing A-Train in, can we talk about A-Train's like anthem, his rap that was done by a white guy? Like who was just like had the sick flow to use a term that the kids use these days, maybe, I don't know, a couple years ago, but
that was hilarious.
Like it was great. And then she's like, yeah, we got like Lil Nas or somebody he was gonna do the
Lil Nas,
like,
X, I think.
Yeah, Lil Nas X is gonna drop the, you know, a good showing for Ashley, just a little bit of Ashley, but a good showing for Ashley this week. But yeah, I don't know, it like, and they're like, well, they're just gonna give Slipknot or Sonic Boom or whatever the A-Train costume. You think you're A-Train? They own the copyright to that. You're just nobody. And it's like, oh my god, wow, that was that was so great to see.
Yeah, and again, I've already said this, but his storyline is so, it runs in parallel to so much we see. And again, as a sports guy, I watch, my sports watching has been down, you know, for the last couple of years. But overall, in sports, you know, you have a certain time frame where, yeah, you have to get that. And if injuries happen or age happens, a lot of these teams are just saying, hey, you know what? You were good while you lasted, but it's time to move on.
Yeah.
And A-Train is that, you know, aging athlete. Well, he's not an aging athlete. He's actually an athlete that's coming back from an injury.
He's like Delonte West.
Which,
like, think about it.
Delonte?
Well, he got hooked on like meth and shit. You know, he hooked up with LeBron's mom, and then he got into drugs, and then LeBron dumped him out of the league. Actually, I don't know if LeBron dumped him out of the league. I just wanted to bash LeBron a little bit. but no, I mean, like he's kind of like in that line. He's a guy who's got problems, and you know, hopefully he gets them fixed. I mean, I think he's ruined his heart though with all the compound V. So
right.
Which, you know, the whole thing about like making the compound V be stable in adults, is this the way that we get our superpowered boys from the comics?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, because with the advent of bringing Stormfront in, I think it's great that, you know, we've had a couple seasons of these, you know, non-powered individuals, you know, going against the Supes, but it's just an untenable situation.
They
need to even the odds.
Mm-hmm.
So sooner or later, I think they have to, you know, get dosed up with a V, and, you know, what happens, happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right. All right, let's talk. So if we're going to talk about Stormfront, we have to talk about Homelander, because they were super intertwined this week. Let's talk about the opening of the episode. Hey, buddy, what you got there?
So when I first saw the opening, the first thing I thought was Wedding Crashers, the dinner scene.
Right?
With Isla Fisher. That's the first thing I thought of.
Did you half expect her to stick a dirty sock in Homelander's mouth? Anyway, so, it's Isla, by the way.
Isla Fisher.
Anyway, yeah. Yeah. No, one, it was super gruesome. Two, it was kind of hot, you know, because, you know, eye cash. But yeah, and then the way she has him wrapped around her finger now.
But wait, hold on, before you say, that's what we thought. And then you see that insecure part of Homelander come out when she doesn't show up, when he finds out that she didn't go where she said she went.
No, it was just that she was gone, that he didn't get his way.
Yeah,
like he's so used to getting his way. When she's like, "Oh no, I gotta see my social media guys," and she went off to Sage Grove, obviously. But you know, and like, because he was like, "I have a surprise for you," and it wasn't sex; it was just the cheesiest flower bouquet ever.
Yeah,
You know,
but what I was saying is, he didn't get his way, but then he finds out she wasn't there. So his issue was not his main issue, but another part of the issue that compounded, mm-hmm. you know, not getting his way was that she lied to him.
Yeah.
So when he came to her and say, "You say you're, durable or something like that. Let's see how durable." And that's when that whole speech she gives him. That's when it's like he's mm-hmm. there, hook, line, and sinker.
Oh
now.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because. Like,
I mean, she played into his whole ego right there.
Right. So. Because she said, and again, I don't think he doesn't give two shits about her plan mm-hmm. in the sense of, you know, what she's trying to do. He just sees her as someone that she said she loves me.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
But once she said that, you knew that Homelander, for the time being, again, because he is so mercurial, you don't know how if she's going to do something that makes him want to crush her head or what.
Right.
But for the time being, you're absolutely right. He is wrapped around her finger now.
I did like the when she flies back to the movie set of Dawn of the Seven, and it makes me laugh every time. And like the whole area is in flames. She's like, "What happened to your trailer?" And he just looks there. He goes, "Electrical fire." Just like so passive aggressively. And it's like he burned that bitch to the ground. Just like, you know, he was like, "Yeah, I've had enough of this movie set. Let's do some damage." Yeah, I don't know. There wasn't a whole lot of Homelander in this episode. I think, you know, it was a nice break, but what we got from him, like you said, Anthony Starr is just so freaking awesome in this role. And he steals the scene every time he's on there, the screen. Mm-hmm. He's
I love some of the memes you have where it's like everybody when Homelander enters is on screen.
Yeah,
because yeah, he is such a good he is so good at this character.
Yeah,
so I'll have to say it because I don't think I've seen him. I've seen like his acting credits, and I don't think I've actually seen him in some of the things.
Yeah, because he's from like New Zealand or something, and I don't really know him. From a lot of things, but see, I like that.
I do too, and again, that kind of plays back into what we were talking about with Miss Marvel casting, where you know, seeing someone where we don't necessarily have these preconceived mm-hmm. notions of who they are or who they're characterized as.
Yeah, like I never saw Banshee. I think the only thing I'd seen him in before The Boys was Without a Paddle. The,
I haven't seen that.
It's the Seth Green and Dax Shepard movie. So, wait a second.
So, yeah, it's this. And I can't believe we only have two episodes left after this.
I know. So, well, you know, like last week, the episode came out on Thursday night. So I watched it right after we finished recording.
I know. I'm kind of watching the time now. It's like, what time did it come out? Was it 10?
I don't know. I just popped on at 10 o'clock and it said new episode. I was like, well, let's see what this has to say. Like, you know, I didn't know what it was. I thought it was maybe that stupid after show or something.
Yeah, I tried watching that. I couldn't do it.
I can't do it. I just can't. It's like Chris Hardwick ruined after shows. I mean, he did. There's no actual like real like talk about it. It's all just like stroking each other's egos.
Yeah, I don't want to see.
I'll be honest too. Like, I don't really care what celebrities have to say about like the world. So I don't. You know,
that's honestly a huge part. That's why I actually like the behind the scenes. I don't know if you noticed, but. I don't know when this came out, but I saw on Netflix yesterday they have the behind the scenes of The Witcher, and they have it's just like 5 or 6 minute clip or 5 or 6 minute kind of behind the scenes of each episode. Huh. So that was pretty cool.
Interesting. So,
where do we go from here?
I don't think I even want to guess. I just want to enjoy it and watch.
And that's one of the things I'd like. I try to make myself do. I've done less of. Is trying to kind of postulate
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen. I did a couple weeks ago, you know, one of the things I said when it felt like Huey was kind of losing it.
Yeah.
I thought this is definitely leading towards him taking the V. But again, as our, you know, as we're just talking a few minutes ago, yep. I think all of them are going to have to.
I think,
you
know, yeah, I think they're all going to dose up. Because in I did see the preview and it looks like Starlight's cover's blown. So
where did you see the? Was it on? Did you see it on?
On the YouTube? No, just on YouTube.
Oh, okay,
I went just went on YouTube and looked it up. So I spend all day on YouTube okay. anymore, like you know, sourcing news and
yeah,
stuff like that for work. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, no, it was a great episode. Like this whole season, I have really, really enjoyed, and I don't think it's missed a beat from the first season, and I think it's taken the first season and expanded on it and made it even better.
Yeah, and again, I know people are saying, didn't you all say this the other like an episode or two
yeah.
ago? Or it is. It's true. It's not something. It's. I love how it, like you said, it expands the story, which, by the way, this means that we are going to get somewhere down the line an origin story for Mother's Milk.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to.
Oh, yeah. He's the only one left.
Yeah. But, like, it's expanded it,
mm-hmm.
but it hasn't overexpanded.
Correct.
They're, you know, where it's that just right, you know, not too hot, not too cold. It's just that just right type of natural expansion from the season prior to it.
Yes.
And I'm loving getting to know these characters better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really, you know, love some of the additions to
yeah.
this show.
Like Cindy.
I mean, Aya Cash, great addition.
Yeah.
Terrible character, great addition.
Right. Cindy is going to be an awesome addition, I have a feeling. The mm-hmm. the girl with the crushy ability.
Yes.
And who's also invulnerable. Really cool. So yeah,
at least bulletproof. So
yeah, she may not be nigh invulnerable, but she's definitely well. No, because she got the shocky. You know,
which means she's durable. I don't know if she could take Homelander's lasers. Which
I mean, she could probably just crushy. So
which that's
see, I'm hoping they'd like recruit her. You know, that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. So
anyway.
But yeah, overall, I'm really enjoying this season.
Yep.
And I mean, again, this is another episode. I'd give this an 8.5.
Yeah,
at
absolutely.
Least.
I think this one had like a 9.2 or something on IMDb.
Which I could, and again, I sometimes try to, like, I don't want to oversell things, but this is it's a great episode. And I don't use that much, but
yeah.
a great episode with some great
yeah.
character moments.
I mean, the cool thing to think about, right, is... It's 8 episodes, so there's no filler.
Yes.
It's all story. And even though this, like I said, was a transitional episode that, you know, it got us where we needed to go, and it moved the story along, and yeah, it did good stuff. So I was very pleased.
The more I see shows like this where they have these 8 and 10 episode seasons...
Yeah.
The more I think, more shows really need to do
yes,
this.
Every
and again,
show
with
should.
Network shows, yeah. I get why yeah. they're not going to do that because you know the.
See, the I think with network shows, if you do like 10, 13 max, like you can do more shows and you can do better shows. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
all right. So, just the ratings on Internet Movie Database, IMDb. The first episode, 8.5. The second episode, 8.1. The third episode, 9.3. Fourth episode, 8.2. Fifth episode, 8.6. This episode, 9.3. So, I mean, it's just crushing it. Like, you know, I mean, and if you go back, if you look at the first season ratings, 8.8, 8.6, 8.5, 8.8, 8.5, 8.3, 8.9, 9.1. So, I mean, people are liking season 2 better than season 1.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen a couple people say they didn't, which, again...
That's fair. Like, it's all subjective. It's
fair.
Art. Like,
it's,
you know...
Yeah, it's
you
absolutely...
Know. I mean, it's horribly gruesome and gory art, but it's still art.
Again, I understand why people would be turned off. You know, some people just... Like, it's funny because I watched... You know, I told you I watched Reactors, and some of the Reactors, they can't watch the gruesomeness. They'll turn away, you know, and... There are some people that I would not recommend this show to because that I know who, you know, can't handle violence and stuff
yeah.
like that. Even though this show is so much more than that.
Yep.
Like there are some people that just can't get past that.
Correct.
So
correct.
I get it. I get it.
All right.
But yeah, I'm really loving what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I really hope the episode's on in like an hour and a half from when we're recording this, because I want to watch it so bad. All right, cool, man. I think we said everything we can say without like spoiling some cool stuff that happened.
Yes.
So like the alley scene. But yeah, all right, cool. Well, hey, real quick shout out. Thanks, Julian Brown, for being a patron. Check us out, patreon.com/infestpodcast. You guys actually get episodes like The Boys comes out early on Thursday nights. You get our episode early on Thursday night. And I also want to thank Flying Pork Apparel. So I sent you the pictures. So I sent Brad an email earlier in the week with a couple like superhero designs, logos. I said, hey, can I get this shirt? Like these two shirts with these color schemes and everything. And 3 days later, I'm wearing a Red Hood shirt. So
these are pretty slick designs.
Yeah. I think I posted them to my Instagram. I think, if I didn't, I will. But yeah, like check out Flying Pork Apparel. Like, you know, they're a sponsor. They have our shop. Like if you want to help support the show, like go buy a t-shirt or five, you know, Christmas is coming around the corner. Buy t-shirts for all your nerd friends. But yeah, no, I love having Brad as a friend, because I just like come up with ideas and he makes them real.
Makes your dreams come true.
Yeah. I mean, I still have your Infamous Podcast shirt and Krakoan, so you just gotta come up here and get it.
Just because you forgot it when you were down here.
I totally forgot. But like I'm glad I did, because I got you another thing too that you're gonna like. That's a secret.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, anywho, on that.
A Cad Bane?
No, I did not get you a Cad Bane. You can only buy one, and I'm not giving you my one Cad Bane.
Oh, whatever.
I did get two armorers, though, and that made me very happy.
Yeah, I did too.
Because I got two and somebody didn't get any. Anywho, on that note, on that maniacal note, we will see you guys next week, and thanks for listening. Go give us 5 stars review on iTunes or Podchaser would be, or Apple Podcast or Podchaser would be great. And we'll talk to you next week. Later.
See ya.
The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati, with new episodes out every Sunday. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as at Infamous Podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcatching app. If you're enjoying the show, consider giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/infamouspodcast for our new tiers and rewards. The Infamous Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Brian Tudor, with music provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. You can find me on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as at Brian Tudor. So, whenever you're listening to the show, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Later.